Welcome back. Thanks so much for joining me this afternoon. It's Deb Hutton, your guest host, with you until 6 o'clock. And every Tuesday at this time, I'm also joined by Adam Bunch, who is an award-winning author, storyteller, and historian. Welcome back to The Rush, Adam.
Thanks, as always, for having me.
So this week, we're going to talk about the Toronto Islands. I'm sure lots of interesting stories about them.
Did you say them?
I think there's multiple.
The city might be split. It's a bit of a beach situation.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
The islands. But there are definitely multiple islands out there, though they haven't always been that way. It was a peninsula in the city's early days. And for, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of years before that, it was still connected to the mainland. So they didn't become islands until the 1850s. They were placed out there, sort of out in the lake, very important for local First Nations long before the city was founded, and then a nice spot once the settlers arrived. People called it the island even before it was disconnected from the mainland, because it was a bit hard to get there. All the way out there, you had to get past the Ashbridges Marsh that is where the Portlands are today. But it wasn't until 166 years ago, just this past weekend, that they were finally severed from the mainland. It was a very sandy place for a lot of the city's first few decades. Contractors were going out there and kind of stealing the sand for their own construction work. And eventually, in the 1850s, it got battered by a series of storms. The last one happening in 1858 that swept away a bunch of the sand of the Eastern Gap and swept away a hotel that was standing out there too, nearly swept away the family that owned the hotel. And the city finally, after sort of patching it up year after year, decided to just let it take its course. And by the end of May, steamships could get through and they became the islands of today, where lots of Toronto's weird history has happened.
So interesting. So they had sort of continued to maintain it as an island, keep it intact until that last storm in 1858.
Yeah, they kept patching. There'd be a small channel that would get through. You could take a rowboat through maybe. But they kept pouring in more sand to keep it joined together, but eventually gave up. And eventually, I think, dredged it and opened it up too. And made it safe for ships, which has been a lot of the island's history, too, is related to just how dangerous it can be out there. That was especially true in the 1700s, the 1800s, the city's early days as a settlement. There were at least low sort of sandy shoals hidden just beneath the surface of the water. So there have been countless ships wrecked out there. Lots of dramatic stories about crews getting, you know, overwhelmed by storms and dramatic rescue. Ward's Island is named in part after David Ward, who dedicated his life to saving people from drowning and from shipwrecks after losing his sisters as a boy when they were out in a little sailboat on the harbor. And you still even get reminders of those dangerous days. There's the Gibraltar Point Lighthouse, which is still standing there. I think it's the oldest building in Toronto that's still standing on the spot it was first built, all the way back in the very early 1800s, providing this beacon for the ships so that they wouldn't run into those shoals around the islands. The first lightkeeper, J.P. Rademuller, also has a strange story of how he was murdered by some soldiers stationed in a nearby blockhouse. So we've got that very big physical stone reminder of the days when the islands were dangerous. And every once in a while, you can even spot one of the old shipwrecks itself. The sands out by Gibraltar Point are always shifting in the waves, getting worn away and replaced. And sometimes some bits of at least one old shipwreck will get revealed on the beach out by Gibraltar before the sands shift again and it gets swallowed up.
So help us understand, I'm speaking with Adam Bunch, who is a historian and a storyteller and is the host of our segment every Tuesday, Weird Toronto History. So tell me where this, at Gibraltar Point, where you could see shipwrecks. I've never heard this before and think it's something fascinating from a tourist perspective.
Yeah, I'm not sure they really widely publicize the exact location. I'm not actually sure exactly which beach it is. And out by Gibraltar Point, so where the lighthouse is and where the old Artscape, which has a new name now, that sort of artist center is. So the way to head out to that part of the island anyway is take the ferry out to Hanlon's Point and walk all the way south down Hanlon's, past the clothing optional beach till you hit the area around the lighthouse. And that's where a lot of the city's shipwrecks took place. A part of the islands that would then also become a big attraction, just like it is today. Hanlon's became a place for people to go have fun after those years of shipwrecks, and maybe overlapping a bit between them too. So if you do that walk out to Gibraltar Point, you'll be passing by what used to be Canada's answer to Coney Island. Hanlon's Point used to be filled with big attractions, mostly thanks to Lowell Solman, who's the guy who owned the Toronto Ferry Company, who was always looking for ways to get people to go visit the islands so that he could sell tickets to the ferry. And then sometimes, if you own the attractions there, he'd get to charge you a second time to then go visit those tourist attractions. So there's a series of big baseball stadiums out there. It's where Babe Ruth hit his first professional home run as a minor leaguer. A big Hanlon's Hotel, big amusement park too, that had big rides, and maybe one of the weirdest attractions in Toronto history, a pair of diving horses. Two horses named King and Queen sort of be forced to walk up a big tall platform and then take a big dive into the lake, something I don't think we allow to happen today, but makes for some of the strangest photos in the Toronto archives. And Lowell Solman was such sort of an entrepreneurial spirit that even when the ballpark and the amusement park burned down, he ended up selling tickets to the ferry for people who wanted to go watch his stuff burn down. So always looking for ways to make a little money off of the islands through the late 1800s and early 1900s.
That's amazing. I have never heard this stuff. And I've taken my kids to the island before. I've never heard any of this stuff.
Yeah, and there's not much evidence of that era.
No, and I don't understand that, right? It's interesting, especially the baseball history. I mean, I wish we did more from a tourist perspective.
Yeah, there are a few plaques out there. There's one for Babe Ruth's home run. But you really have to know where to look to find any signs of that era when it was this huge destination. And still is, of course. The ferries are always packed, but there used to be a lot of attractions out there. And a lot of the changes happened sort of in the middle of the 1900s when the city decided the whole area should be turned into parkland. Today, you'll still find people living out there, of course, and there's still houses and communities and neighborhoods, but there used to be even more. Back in the 1800s, people started living there in the summer, making first tents and then cottages. But when the city decided to try to start turning it into parkland, a lot of those houses got demolished. Some of them also got moved, which is another strange bit of the island history, is that there used to be a bunch of houses at Hanlon's Point, too, not far from the amusement park. A bunch of them ended up getting moved by barge and floated across Toronto Harbor to what was then, I think, Sunfish Island and is now Algonquin Island. There's a whole community there today that started with those houses that were floated over from Hanlon's Point. And in the end, the city meant to demolish every house out there, but there's big public outcry and protest movements to save it. So the fact that we still have people living on the island today is thanks to the people who sort of resisted wiping out everything that was there and starting from scratch.
Adam Bunch, as always, interesting. He's an award-winning author, storyteller, and historian, and he is our own Tuesday afternoon storyteller on Weird Toronto History. Talk next week, Adam.
Talk to you then.